Hey, sales peeps, this is Benjamin Shapiro. I'm a brand development and marketing strategy consultant and the host and producer of the top-rated MarTech podcast. I know a few things about helping organizations succeed with their marketing and sales operations. And if you want to learn how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, you should be listening to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Joining me on the Authentic Persuasion Show today is Benjamin Shapiro. Benjamin is a brand development and marketing strategy consultant. He left a successful career in business development at eBay to become an entrepreneur that has run a bootstrap startup, multiple marketing teams at early stage VC-backed companies, and an independent consulting and content business. He also specializes in helping those companies understand how to identify the overlap between corporate identity and customer needs to build an effective marketing platform. And what I know him most for, which is what I'm excited to hear about as well, is he is the producer and host of the top-rated MarTech podcast, which is amazing. You got to check it out, everybody. Ben, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Jason, thanks for having me as your guest. Excited to chat.
And this is one of those things, I said this right before we started, which is fascinating. If you listen to podcasts long enough, you get to know somebody just by hearing them in their episodes regularly. And this is one of those moments where I've been listening to you for like a year and a half. We talked once before. I even attended a MarTech conference that you were heavily involved with last year in San Jose. And so I feel like I know you really well. And I'm super excited to talk because you're bringing in this marketing side that most salespeople really need.
It's one of the great things about podcasting as a medium that you can reach a lot of people and sort of think of it as a push mechanism to get your content out there. And having done this for 2.5, almost 3 years now, I didn't realize how much sort of networking would come within the podcast community. We've met each other. I've met some of my guests. I've obviously interviewed a fair amount of people, but also get to know the audience that you're talking to as well. And the beauty of the medium.
Yeah, and I think that's amazing. And I know you have two podcasts. There's one that I listen to regularly. And what's the other one that you have?
Yeah, there's the MarTech podcast, which is using technology to market your business and service. And then there's the Voices of Search podcast, which is an SEO and content marketing podcast.
Love it. And then on the MarTech side, you have over 700 episodes. You're putting out episodes 7 days a week, which makes me feel like I need to step up my game. I know that there's probably too many things to list in there as far as most impactful for an organization that's struggling with sales and marketing. But is there anything that comes to mind that you've learned over those episodes or in general from your guests?
Yeah, for the record, we cheat. We republish our best of content on the weekends. We've published 700 episodes, but we really have 500 new episodes, and some of them are repeats. Of the things that I've learned, there have been a lot over the last couple of years. In terms of a content business, you have to be consistent and predictable and dependable. And the more volume you can push out, the faster your content is going to grow. From a sales and marketing perspective, I think where the podcast has been useful is not only reaching people in our audiences, but it's been a wonderful networking tool. As I mentioned, some of our guests have become our sponsors. And so weaving some of the ways that you are building content, who you're building your content with, you never know who's going to be your customers. And so the podcast has been super useful for just kind of broadening the net of the sphere of influence that me and my organization have.
I love it. And I think that's super important, especially if you're looking at a content-related strategy like you're talking about, where you're putting out content and hopefully attracting people, more of a pull into your business. And then those relationships, like you said, you never know where things will lead and where they'll go, especially if you're looking at the long game, right? Instead of the short one, which is, we just met, how can I sell you something? Or how can I make you a client? Versus, we just met, let's see where this goes.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that, oddly enough, the MarTech podcast was an experiment that failed. I was starting a podcast and the idea was that it was going to be a lead generation tool for my consulting practice. And the podcast did relatively well early on, so I decided to keep making the content. And I never actually figured out a way to get people from being my listeners or being my guests to becoming my consulting clients. Now, on the positive side, the audience kept growing and growing and growing, and we were able to figure out a sponsorship model with our content. But sometimes you just have to stick with it and wait for a marketing channel to mature. And, you know, I think that goes into your sales outreach as well. When you're doing your sales outreach, sometimes you're going to hear not no, but not now, and that's fine. You have to be patient. You have to allow relationships to mature, and that sometimes takes time and consistent effort. And we've seen the growth in the MarTech podcast and our sponsorship program be a direct reflection of that type of approach.
And what's interesting too is I look at a lot of people's podcasts or the things that they do. And if we're talking about podcasts specifically where it seems really successful, seems like they've got it dialed in, they've got the call to action or they've got the sponsorship. And generally, if you look back far enough, you can see this was probably not their first podcast or they went through that period like you're talking about of evolving. I've thought about it recently where I thought maybe I should just end this show and start a new one with everything I've learned and do it right the second time, right? Versus kind of evolving because it just takes time. Anything takes time.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's kind of the practice of the new modern way of marketing. And I know that it impacts sales as well as we get so many data points now. And there's so much to look at that you really have to understand how to read the signals, read the tea leaves, and understand what's resonating with your audience, with your prospects, with your leads to try to figure out what you should be doing more of. An example with the MarTech podcast, we started off, I was launching hour-long podcasts that people were listening to a quarter of. And so I had already recorded 10 of them. I decided to take 5 of them and split them in half. And people listened to more than 50% of the episodes once I split them in half. And then I split them again. So out of 1 hour-long conversation, I would get 4 episodes. And now all of a sudden, people are listening to 90% or more of each piece of content. And so by looking at the data and understanding how your users are behaving, you can create something that more suits their needs. And honestly, that's really kind of central to my approach to marketing. Also, what we've done with our, you know, sales approach, whether we're doing outbound prospecting, how we manage our inbound leads, you have to really look at what's happening, what signals you're getting from what data sources, and be able to test and iterate based on data that you're getting. And I don't think that's something that's specifically marketing related. It impacts sales as well.
And always keeping in mind the long-term goal and strategy of whatever that is that's being done. Like we talked about right before starting today is that approach that you take. And then I just shifted this podcast to long form, full episodes, going the opposite direction of you, going to hour long. And it depends on what the goal is. So you've got to make something fit, but then also looking at the numbers and the results. And is it working out long term? And when you're talking about marketing, content strategies, feeding into sales and selling or revenue, what makes the most sense for your culture, your organization, and the goals?
Yeah, absolutely. There's been an increasing overlap between sales and marketing. And so to me, the approach has become similar. And honestly, the line between what is sales and what is marketing is getting blended, right? And even to the point where in the marketing world, we're seeing the CMO title kind of disappearing. And we're seeing more CROs who are responsible for sales and marketing because the funnel does not stop when someone is introduced to whatever your product or services gets from the initial awareness building phase into being an MQL, right? That's not the end of the goal. That customer journey goes through the sales process and also through what their customer relationship and customer success looks like. And so we're seeing this sort of trend of thinking about sales and marketing more in a holistic fashion. And the underlying way to be successful that is understanding who you are, what your products, your services are, everybody sort of being on the same page, but also understanding true definition of what the customer needs are, why they're coming to you, and what their relationship has been with the organization to the point where they have landed in your CRM or in your meeting room or your Zoom conference, whatever it may be. You know, it's 2020 and we're not getting together in rooms these days.
Let's talk about that CRO position because anyone that's listened to me or knows me knows that I'm a huge fan of that in concept because historically there's always an issue between sales and marketing, like most organizations, where there's just a rub, right? So marketing thinks they're producing good qualified leads or prospects. Sales thinks they're not good enough and they're not doing their part. Marketing thinks sales isn't closing enough leads. And so it's just always this battle. And then you have this new emergence, like you said, of the CRO or even the revenue ops manager, director of revenue ops, just something where they're tying together, right? Instead of sales versus marketing. However, though, I'd love to get your opinion on this. What I've seen is that person who moves into the CRO position, the chief revenue officer, is coming from either sales or marketing. How could that bias still affect them where they're 51-49 marketing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's different depending on the stage of the organization. Okay. So when you're talking about megacorp with 30,000 employees and these large, complicated marketing programs and huge multi-touch attribution problems and giant outbound sales teams and SDRs, it's a lot for one person to manage that entire organization. And even getting into customer success and retention, you can really think of there's thousands of people that can be like, let's take a Adobe or Oracle, like one CRO, that's a lot of responsibility for one person to manage or one organization to manage. I think when you're in a smaller organization, it's easier to find somebody to kind of just manage all the personalities and challenges and nuances and intricacies. And no one's going to have perfect experience with marketing, sales, customer success. I think where it matters is less about who is running the organization and how the organization is structured, and more that the flow of data and the systems are similar. And so you're not getting mixed signals, right? The excuse of the Glengarry, Glenn Ross excuse. The problem is the leads, right? Marketing isn't doing their job and marketing is saying, hey, we got you great leads. You're not closing.
Yeah.
That conversation doesn't happen when everybody is using the same system. And so to me, there is a MarTech solution, and this is sort of traditional MarTech 101, is the like stack building system integration to make sure that the flow of data from where the customer is in their buying journey, what the experience they've had, what content they've consumed, gives the sales team an understanding of how to approach them as a lead. In reality, most of the time, it's not that the leads are good or bad. They just might not be mature. And so if they're showing up with sales and sales has to do some more education or credibility building because they're reaching out to someone who only has a couple of touch points, then you could still convert those leads. You just have to do a little bit more of the top of funnel type selling and less of the like direct response type stuff. As opposed to, you know, if somebody's kind of been around the block and gone through three sales pitches and now is the time where they're just ready to sign the IO, you don't have to do credibility building. They're ready to go. They're packaged and ready to be driven off the lot. Understanding where someone exists and what their experience is and having the systems flow together, to me, is more of the challenge than where do you divide the line between the teams.
Makes sense. And what I hear you saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is that with that transparency, with the MarTech stack, right? So putting in different tools in place to create that transparency, even information, is also imperative for setting the right expectation for what the sales team is then getting out of the other end.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I think that there is a KPI or OKR or whatever we're calling the metric that everyone looks at. Like we should all be evaluated off of the bottom line, not the leading indicators at the end of the day. And that's hard to do in real time. It's hard to say, well, I drove this huge volume of leads, but they're not going to mature for 3 to 6 months. How do you figure out if marketing is doing a good job? Because you have to wait for maturity. But in theory, if everybody's working on the same metric, then we're all aligned on the same goal. And you know, at the end of the day, that's bottom line profit or, you know, revenue, whatever the metric you want to look at for sales efficiency, you know, marketing efficiency as well. So I don't think that it's just, hey, you got to get the system and the data to flow from Marketo to Salesforce and Salesforce to whatever your customer success tool is. It's more than that. It's also, what are your goals? How are you communicating? Who are the people? And then what's the process you're putting in place to make sure that everybody understands and does that handshake successfully, as opposed to, we're lobbing leads over the fence. I hope you catch them. That's not a good system anymore.
And If we're looking, though, at the end result being the revenue, right? Bottom line revenue, that's what's on the scoreboard. But that's such a lagging indicator, right? Like that's in the future from the actions taken right now by sales and marketing. Where do you see that being able to direct it so that you're not just doing some marketing? In 3 months, we'll see what happens. And maybe you're going in the wrong direction for those 3 months. Is there any good leading indicators?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where you're using that data, your historical data, to figure out what a lead score is. And so you're using all of your historical data to basically create effective leading indicators. And that is kind of like the traditional CRMing of how many touch points does someone need to become a customer? Let's profile them. Let's look at what content they're consuming. Let's just understand the customer journey and behavior where we've had success and try to measure that and drive people into similar experiences. Then we're evaluating, are they hitting those touch points? And that's where you're creating your lead scoring. And to me, that's a little bit more of a leading indicator as opposed to trailing.
And it's probably different on different sizes of companies, but like what percentage of time, energy, or budget you see successfully companies using for testing various marketing forms?
It depends what stage of the company, right? When you're just starting out, everything's a test. And you're always testing even in your mature channels. Mm-hmm. Very rarely should you just turn a channel on, leave it alone, and forget it exists. Like that's just right. Not a great practice. People have thrown around different, hey, you should be using 20% of your budget on experimental channels and 75% of it on, or 65% of it on mature channels and cultivating other channels with the remainder. Everybody has a different opinion. It's a really hard question to answer because the factors that go into it are, where are you in your business's life cycle? What in-house experience you have to get a channel up and running? What data points do you have to say whether a channel can scale or not? So I don't really think about how much of your budget should you be experimenting. To me, that is a little bit more of the operator's decision. And it's really a judgment call of like, hey, we're seeing some traction on, let's say, the MarTech podcast as an example. We tested out running AdWords campaigns early on, buying the keyword MarTech podcast and some other similar keywords. And it was great, super efficient. But nobody's looking for that. So why am I going to invest more time, even if it's an efficient channel? It's just really hard to scale because that's not the type of marketing channel that grows with the type of product we have, with a content product. So then we looked at Facebook and said, look, it's really inefficient to try to drive downloads using social channels. It's just not really where people are looking for that type of content, at least at this point. Sure, there's lots of opportunities. The sky's the limit in terms of the amount of volume. We can't figure out spend efficiently. Maybe we'll double back to this down the road. And then we started doing some podcast advertising, putting our ads on other people's podcasts. And all of a sudden, we saw that there was great traction, low CPAs to get new listeners. And we felt like there was a big opportunity to scale. So we just focused all of our efforts on that channel until we started seeing the point of diminishing returns, which we haven't got to yet. And it's been 2.5 years. Now, I've experimented with some other channels here and there, but really our focus has been on this cultivating and growing this one primary channel. Until you're at the end of the road and there's just no more growth, or you can see the end of the road, it doesn't make sense to go and focus a lot of effort on a channel that you've already proven isn't going to work. So you kind of have to test and feel and figure out your own way. There is something to be said for disintermediating, for not just being reliant on one individual channel or platform. But if you're driving a dollar CPA through one channel and a $5 CPA channel through the other one, it's probably not worth doing a lot of testing on something that's five times as inefficient as the first channel.
Nor the to be diversified for the sake of being diversified, when it's so much more expensive. And what I love the most of what you said was about how you tried some things, various ways to go, various channels. It's not where your clients were, right? It's not where your audience was. They're not doing it. No matter how efficient, no matter how cheap, no matter how effective it could be from a cost standpoint, it just doesn't matter. Like people aren't Googling MarTech podcast just looking for that. They either know about it or they don't. They're looking for other things. So I love that you evolve with that, which I see a lot of companies, they get married to what's either cheapest or what they know really well or what they think works well without keeping in mind but where are your audience? Where is your potential customers? Where do they want to be met at?
It always comes back to that. And the big secret here for thinking about marketing, and I do think that this is very relevant for sales as well, if you want to figure out what your customers and your audience really wants, you should go ask them, right? This is not you should survey them. You should go find people that are already in your target market that you know of and go sit down and have a conversation. Go meet 10 people and talk to them about what products they're interested, why they're interested in them, where they go to research them, how they consume media related to the topic. And they will tell you the answers of where you should be marketing and what you should be saying to them. It's not super scientific when you're doing qualitative research. I feel like we get so caught up. Yes, absolutely. You should be looking at the data. I've already said that we do that to try to figure out how we should iterate, but you should always be talking to the people as well and understanding the journey and the mindset of the people that you know are your customers to try to replicate what their needs and wants are. And they will tell you the answers of how and where you should be marketing.
Got it. So let's talk about the sales side. So obviously you're focused on the marketing, feeding into sales with either the organizations that you work with on the consulting side, or just your experience with the guests that you've had on your show and all the interactions. What are sales teams doing right when it comes to interacting with marketing or running with the ball from marketing?
What are sales teams doing right when it comes to interacting with marketing? I think we talked about it a little bit where they're integrating more, and that the line in the sand of the cocktail sipping, display campaign creating, creative marketers sitting and not talking to the like suit wearing salesmen who are just, you know, out there holding the briefcase. Like those days don't exist anymore. Right. Yeah. We sit next to each other. We all kind of look the same. We speak the same language. We're coordinating. What are our campaigns? Who are they reaching? How are we responding to them from a sales perspective? And that integration and that shared KPI and shared data is really what is going to drive you to be successful. Feeling like there is an understanding of who the customer is, what their experience has been in, and making that journey for them feel relevant and cohesive, I think is the secret sauce. A shared understanding of segmentation, who our prospects are, why we're targeting them, what we've been saying to them is very important for the sales team to understand, right? Not all leads are created equal, and understanding which campaign someone was in, so you understand what content they've consumed and potentially why they are interested in your product or where they are in the buying cycle, creates a better sales experience. Right? It's going to improve your relevancy, your authenticity, and help you be more persuasive. In terms of like where marketing channels are integrating with sales, I think that email has become a channel for everyone. And so to me, that's kind of the blended marketing and sales channel now, is like who's reaching out. Marketing emails are getting more personal. And so it's hard to separate what's a marketing email and what's a sales email now. And I think that understanding that people want to work with people, not people want to work with organizations, is something that helps kind of smooth over the line between sales and marketing.
Which is super true. I mean, people always buy from people, want to buy from people, want to deal with people. They might like brands or come to trust a brand, but ultimately, end of the day, if we're talking about something that requires an interaction between sales and a prospective customer, they want to deal with people. And a lot of times I see organizations where they just want to mass market. They want to send out lots of stuff. They want to try to efficiently create a bunch of scale, and it just takes away that element. And I really like what you said about sales understanding the journey that that prospective buyer, that customer went on before then. I've seen that in a lot of organizations where sales just assumes, like, just get me in front of somebody and I'll do my thing, but they're not looking at the journey. And then usually what happens is that salesperson is really good at closing leads from one area or one campaign, but not others, because they're trying to treat them all the same. And that's not effective. I mean, you literally, if you have three or four marketing channels, you've got to speak to those people during your interactions, like over the phone or Zoom now, in four different ways, because they got to you through four different methods, and they have a different expectation. They know more or they know less about you.
And that's fine. Look, if you've got salesperson who's great at turning cold leads into hot leads, great. Feed the beast, right? There's nothing wrong with that being the case. It's just you have to understand that's more team management. Like you have to understand what your team's strengths are and put people in a position to succeed. And maybe some people are great with email and some people are great over the phone and some people are great in person. That's fine. There's no reason why every salesperson has to be great at everything. Some people just have great sort of traditional sales experience. Put them in a room with people. Let them take them out to drinks, whatever it is. Some people are great technical salespeople and put them in front of a keyboard and let them work their wizardry.
And that's it. And self-awareness and understanding where to put the people on the team, right? Like if you had a sports team and you're a coach, not everyone gets to play quarterback, right? Like you wouldn't ever do that. Yet in sales, it's like, okay, everyone gets to be going for the game-winning score every time.
Yeah, for sure.
So in your perspective from the marketing side, other than the data, right? We talked about data and transparency, but what can sales give to marketing in feedback or information to help them adjust from a like working together standpoint?
Yeah, put the data in the CRM, fill out the TPS report, right? Like actually give the data. Collaboration is really the answer here, that you need to not just give them the data. You got to sit down and talk. And say, hey, look, these are the leads that converted. What are some of the common trends? Get the feedback from marketing, understanding what's actually happening, and just be on the same page. That's really the secret sauce, is have it be teamwork. And that should hopefully help the marketing campaigns understand what they should be focused on and then give them a sense of what's actually going to convert.
I love it. So shifting a little bit, let's talk about some topics here. What does it mean to you to be authentic?
Be yourself, understand your strengths, and understand that your agenda is not necessarily what is most important. Mostly your service businesses, for me, building an audience or working with our sponsors, I have to create what they want. Not necessarily just say, I want to build a sponsorship program that works for me, but I have to be able to provide value for the people that are going to engage with the podcast, creating our content. It's not about what I want to hear. It's about what the audience wants to hear. And so that authenticity is an understanding of who your customers are and taking just approach that you know is going to benefit them, as opposed to just being self-centered and thinking about yourself.
Got it. And then what about when you hear the word persuasion? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I think that persuasion gets a bad rap. I think that persuasion, people think of pushy and salesy and smarmy. Being persuasive to me is a scenario in front of people that allows them to see why you are working to help them achieve their best interests, right? Understanding that we're on the same page. And to me, that's the most persuasive thing you can do, is A, have authenticity, but B, come at your sales pitch from not, here's what this will do for me, but here's what I can provide you. Here's how our relationship can benefit you. If you're talking about the benefits for who you're selling to, they're going to be more likely to be engaged and you're going to be more likely to be successful.
Got it. With the people that you see, either sales or marketing, because I love your perspective from the marketing side as well, what is some of the most important traits, personality, mindset, attributes of the successful people in those fields?
Yeah, focus on your customer. Talk to them. Have conversations about what their interests are, what their needs are, why they're trying to solve the problem they're trying to solve, and where they're looking for information. And then reflecting basically what they say to you back to them in the marketing vehicles that they're interested in and consuming. I think that's really the secret sauce for me. And then you got to look at the data. You can't just set a marketing channel out there in the world and forget it and hope it works. You got to monitor and evaluate and pivot and adjust. And, you know, it doesn't have to be super complex and wildly technical. We place audio ads, and I've recorded an audio ad that we've been running for like 2 years. The ad's fine. We just move it around to different audiences, and we have to understand what's the point of satiation for people to consume that ad. And then we go find new audiences. It's not rocket science all of the time. you do have to look at what data you have and just try to, you know, use your best judgment and understand who you're trying to reach. And at the end of the day, evaluate, hopefully have some leading indicators, but the trailing indicators and figuring out if you're hitting the bottom line is all that really matters.
Is that what you would classify as the big reason why a lot of companies are struggling right now with marketing or sales?
I think that the reason why companies are struggling with marketing or sales is because there's been a change in how consumers think about consuming advertising. And moving from a ad-driven direct sale, like push you in the direction of my product, that model doesn't necessarily work anymore. It's about creating relevant content, engaging with people who are self-selecting, building relationships with them, and being in front of them at the right place in the right time. That's what really matters and what drives sales now, as opposed to how do I get my ads in front of them and just kind of brute force sell. I don't think that's what people want anymore.
When it's done right, marketing has produced this MQL, somebody who's just like, they've seen enough content, they understand what they're going to be talking to a salesperson about. What then becomes the role of the salesperson in those conversations?
The role of the salesperson is shepherding the relationship forward and evaluating whether the prospect is interested, viable, and then putting forth the points of differentiation for why your product is going to help them achieve what they need in a way that's going to get them to choose your product or services over the competition. I don't think it is persuasion and sales and pushiness. It is about articulating the benefits, understanding what the challenges that they're facing, and putting together and pointing out a solution that's going to help them achieve what they want to at the end of the day.
Makes sense. I love it. And I think that's a shift too, like the shift you said about marketing not being so much just like blanket advertising, trying to push people and just barrage them with this versus other ways. Also sales in that old style was they had all the information. So their job was to lecture and then inform and then push people forward.
Yeah. It's what's versus the problem you're trying to solve and why is this the right solution for you?
Yeah. Which is a big departure, especially for a lot of organizations and salespeople in general, where they think their job is to educate, only educate and monologue and just like throw out lots of information, hoping that will make the sale for them. Just do demos.
Exactly.
Just do lots of demos. All right. So shifting one more time, completely other direction. When you were growing up, what is it that you wanted to be when you got older?
The first baseman for the San Francisco Giants. I wanted to be Will Clark. I don't think that's going to happen. First off, I'm not left-handed. So that kind of almost unilaterally ruled me out from being a major league first baseman. I think if a pitch is over like 65, 70 miles an hour, I'm not hitting it.
When did you realize that dream wasn't happening?
It was about freshman year of high school.
Yeah.
Okay, it worked out. I ended up being a podcaster. Who knew?
You are. I don't know if we would have met if you were the first baseman of the Giants. Who never knew? Know.
Different alternate universe.
So marketing is different than sales, but there's some aspect to it. What would you say is the most non-sales job you've ever had?
I scooped ice cream for my first job at a high school. That's probably the least salesy thing I could have done.
Yeah, I would say so.
I don't know. I mean, sales, it was my first job at a college, and it's always been something that's integrated into my work. And it's one of the reasons why I've gotten into entrepreneurship is that early on I learned how to sell. And so I wasn't afraid of going out on my own.
So for you, which would you say, the journey or the destination?
Journey is the destination. Whenever I travel, getting to the place that you go is not the goal. Just getting to Hawaii is nice, but experiencing the beaches and the culture and the food is what matters, right? Getting to the 100,000 downloads a month marker for our podcast is great. But once we get to that point, like what I'll remember is all the things that we did along the way to get to 100,000 downloads, not, boy, the day we hit 100,000 downloads, you're there, it happens, and you're done. Now you got to find a new goal. So you have to appreciate what you're doing along the way.
I love it. And then what is your definition of success?
I don't know if I have a real definition of success. I think it's constantly evolving. I set pretty almost religious goals for myself at the beginning of the year for what I want to try to accomplish. And then I pivot them throughout the year to just try to always have something that I'm striving for and achieving. But that's not from a professional perspective. From a personal perspective, having some balance and enjoying what you're doing and having it be something that gives you the value creation that you're wanting and helps you build the relationships and helps other people. Like, to me, that's success. And in the business that I'm in, getting to be independent and having some autonomy and some respect within the industry, those are all nice benefits. But success is finding your path and doing the best that you can with what you've got.
I guess I love it.
Of success.
Turns out you did. I love it. That's awesome. Ben, I appreciate you being on here. For everyone listening and or watching this, please make sure to check out his MarTech podcast. So you can go to MarTech Pod or find it everywhere. Voicesofsearch.com as well. And again, if you're salesperson, sales mode like myself, these are great podcasts to understand the marketing side and just bridge that gap. Marketing people, it's definitely a must go to in my opinion. And then you have your personal website, benjshap.com. which I know you have the business stuff there. Anywhere else? Did I miss anything?
No, that's it. I mean, the voice is a search if you're into the SEO and content marketing side as well. But more than anything, Jason, it's great to reconnect and appreciate you having me as your guest.
Thanks for being on here. And for everyone else, I will catch you on the next conversation about authentic persuasion. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.